Christmas. The floor teemed with wet bodies. A disco ball turned overhead, spinning flecks of silver light around the room. Everything grew dreamy, almost abstract, the drunk and the darkness working together. I tried to keep my distance from Jacob, but there were too many people, all twisting their hips and grinding against each other. I had nowhere to stand other than pressed up against him. His hands went to my hips and moved me with him. For a country boy, he could dance. But then we'd always had body chemistry. I turned to take another gulp. Nothing but ice left. Jacob took my cup and passed it off to someone. I didn't see who or where. The room spun with a disco ball. If losing my drink didn't bother me, then I was good and drunk. He raised my left hand.
Some rock.
It's expensive. My words were sloppy.
I'll bet it is. You're Grey King.
Godfrey. My name's Godfrey. The room turned faster. Jacob pulled me tighter against his body. The hard-on under his jeans rubbed against the inside of my thigh. I liked it, so I let him keep doing it. Drunk Grey let him keep doing it. He lifted my chin with his hand, pulling me close to kiss my mouth. No! Paul's here! At least, I think I'd said no. I don't know if I did or not, if it was aloud or only in my head. His lips cut me off, his ashtray-flavored tongue inside my mouth. Sinking into the swirling, sparkling dance floor, I closed my eyes and kissed Jacob back. It was deep, the sort of kiss that brought back a life I'd purposely forgotten. As I pulled away, an icy hand fell on my shoulder. The dream I danced within suddenly felt wrong, like a painting pulled crooked. The hand squeezed hard, like its owner intended to hurt me, to break my collarbone. I turned to face Paul. My vision blurred, but it was definitely him. His voice sounded muffled in my ears. He screamed, but the louder he did, the more distant his words became, as if we were submerged in water. Squinting, I could see by the way his lips moved, he was saying fuck over and over again. As he tugged my arm, I spun on my heels. The jerking sent bolts of pain through my shoulder, like electricity. Sharp burning cut through my swirling daze. My heart beat with the music. Greensleeves was a bizarre choice for a club, even a techno remix, even if it was Christmas Eve.
6. Nina. A nightmare jolted me awake. Nearly as soon as I sprang up, the memory of it vanished. I couldn't recall the terror of moments earlier. Something about a snake? A nasty, mottled snake coiled in a doorway? I turned my phone over on the nightstand. 4:30 a.m. Merry Christmas. I splashed my face with sink water, pulled my jeans up, and threw on a knitted cardigan, navy, with wide white stripes. I grabbed my badge. On the way to the living room, I peeked in on Auntie Tilda. She was deep in a morphine slumber, her chest slow to rise and slower to fall. She wouldn't wake for hours. My stomach growled worse than before I'd fallen asleep. A cheeseburger, some fries, and I'd swing by the station to check on my partner, Sammy. I'd covered for both of us on Thanksgiving, so he was up for the Christmas vigil. But I could still get a head start on the day after's paperwork. I'd be back before Auntie woke up. My patrol car choked for a moment, but cranked. The recession had cut deep into Elizabeth's already starved budgets, and new civil cars were a pipe dream. Recovery hadn't touched this town yet. I didn't flip my headlights on until I backed out of Auntie's driveway. I pressed the radio. Greensleeves played. A techno version. I turned the dial until I found a soft rock station. Nothing too crazy. 10 minutes later, I'd picked up my Dairy Queen combo and radioed Sammy. You don't need to come in. he said, as soon as he picked up. It's quieter tonight than most holidays. Clinic's catching most of them. Drunks, as usual. I'm going to swing by for a few minutes, I answered. What about your aunt? Sammy paid attention like that. She'll be okay for a while. Morphine always does what it says it will. I can't sleep. I'll get a jump on my file so they don't drown me later. I smirked. I won't even speak to you. I could almost see Sammy's grin on the other end of the radio. Better not. He clicked off. I turned down Main Street and hung a right at Marion Avenue. Twinkling Christmas wreaths hung from cast-iron street lamps. Floodlights kept the single-story sheriff's office lit up almost as well as daylight did. Sheriff Jim F. Burton III, in gold lettering. Breaking out front, I snatched my greasy paper bag from the passenger seat and threw my book bag over my shoulder.
We can't keep you away, can we?
The officer at the front desk joked as I passed through the revolving doors into the station. You know you can't. The irony of his statement wasn't lost on me. There were only a handful of detective positions in Elizabeth, and there were more than a handful of good old boys who did their damnedest to keep me away. Me and Sammy both. A room of cubicles waited for me as I turned the corner. The lamps and Sammy's were on, but I'd promised not to talk to him. At least, not until I finished my sandwich. My computer came alive as I toggled the mouse. I took as big a bite as I could manage, my stomach feeling better already.
You're gonna hate this, Nina.
Sammy smiled wide as he poked his head into my cubicle.
Jesus, Sammy, can I finish my burger?
And where the hell's my burger?
What am I gonna hate? And there isn't one, I replied, taking a second bite.
You know, carbs don't scare all gay men shitless. He patted his belly. If you can believe it, we don't all decorate. I've seen your apartment, Sammy. It's a pigsty. Now what am I gonna hate?
Guess who took the Whitman case?
Greg Whitman, the owner of Whitman Autos, had been pulled over for speeding a week ago. Not surprising, considering he kept an inventory of German sports cars. The sort only a few folks in Elizabeth could afford. But doing 60 in a 35 turned into the lesser charge when the patrolman spotted the Coke baggie. Blow was supposed to make folks think fast on their feet, but Greg must not have had much to work with.
A public defender, I'm guessing?
Mr. Whitman was up to his chin in debt. I'd had his finances pulled myself. Sammy stepped into my space. He was younger than me by a couple years, the sort of sharp-jawed guy who'd wanted to be a cop his whole life. Not a lot of book sense, but street smart where it counted.
Yep, a public defender, he answered, running his hand through his sandy hair. Guess who took it from him?
Matthew. Matthew King had a knack for spotting slip-ups in the process. They sometimes seemed to materialize from nowhere for his clients. Mouth full of bacon and beef, I scoffed.
Figures.
You want to bet Matthew starts puttering around town in a spanking new Porsche? Not even if I was a betting woman, I replied. It won't matter. The arrest was clean. The case is solid.
Just thought you'd like to know.
Sammy flashed a grin and turned to walk away. Oh, and by the way, Sam, Merry Christmas, I shouted to the back of his head.
Merry Christmas, Nina, he called.
An hour later, I gathered my things. My eyelids had grown heavy in the time I'd been at my desk. It was why I did Twilight paperwork, the closest to meditation I'd ever get. Book bag back on my shoulders, I made for the front door.
Nina!
Sammy shouted from behind. I turned to face him, jogging my way. You aren't going to be okay for another hour or two? I nodded my brow. Should be. Why? Trucker called in an abandoned vehicle on his way up to North Carolina. Thought you might want to check it out with me. What makes you think that? Tow it, and I'll give it a look tomorrow. I started to turn towards the door. It's a rental. Parked in the emergency lane. Passenger door open, Marsh side. My eyes narrowed. Okay. The rental company operates a 24-hour line. Gave them a call. They matched the vehicle to a Paul Godfrey, who'd taken possession of it at the Charleston airport. A name I didn't recognize at first. As in, Paul Godfrey, the environmentalist? Yep, Paul Godfrey, the environmentalist, he replied. Paul Godfrey, who married Gray King. The morning sun had just started to pierce the pine trees off Paul Revere Highway as I pulled up. A lonesome road with a fitting name. The sort of desolate stretch one could picture its namesake galloping down. Sammy's car cut through the gravel behind mine. We'd driven separately so I could go straight to Auntie's after. I eyed the black Lincoln sedan parked haphazardly as I approached the driver's side door. Aside from the fact that it had been abandoned on the highway shoulder, passenger door swung out. There wasn't anything grossly strange about the car. No scratches. Windows intact. Driver's side unlocked, too. I tugged the door open. It smelled like a rental. Not exactly new car, but not my car, either. Sammy appeared beside me. Anything unusual? Aside from the fact that it's here, no. The car was clean as a coat of paint. Keys seemed to be gone. Should we phone the Kings? Sammy asked. Not yet, I said. But how can we be certain the driver's okay? He asked. It's possible no report means nobody left to report it. Car door left opened and... Wouldn't the family notify us if someone was unaccounted for? A guilty edge crept into my voice. Sammy sighed. My reasoning seemed to leave him unsatisfied. You want me to attach a 24-hour removal notice? Something stirred deep inside me. The whole thing could be innocuous. But just enough was off-kilter. Just enough wasn't right. Folks left cars behind when they partied, and the night before had been a party night for a lot of folks. But they left them at bars, at houses, at restaurants. Not in emergency lanes. Not on Paul Revere Highway. No. Get a tow up here. Take it to the impound lot, I instructed. It's a hazard on the highway shoulder. Let's let the Kings or Paul Godfrey come find it.
7. Gray. Piper Point's stagnant air greeted me when I awoke in the yellow room. My room. There are a few precious seconds after you wake up from a night of hard drinking, when you're at peace. A temporal comfort doled out by the universe to remind you how you could feel in the morning, if you'd made better decisions. Then it's gone, torn from you, and the world you were at peace with, for the briefest of moments, shatters. Cotton mouth, a drill bored into my temples. With every grinding turn, a memory burned into sharp focus. Staggered images bled into the space behind my eyes. The flight, my filthy ring, Mama's church, rubies, Jacob. My heart plummeted, and my stomach tied itself in knots. Shameful knots. Jacob. I kissed him. Or he kissed me. I didn't know which. Paul. I turned to an empty spot beside me in the bed. As I sat up, the world spun. Sweat beaded on my forehead. Liquor wafted off my wet skin. I wore a silk negligee that clung to my body like sweet-smelling paste. A wave of queasiness rippled through my insides, and I sprang for the toilet. A dry heave at first, followed by bits of salad that I'd had at the airport, all I'd eaten yesterday. As I retched, drops of yolk-colored bile dripped into the basin. Footsteps. Paul, maybe? The door to the bathroom creaked as it moved. I wiped my chin, mouth filled with acrid spit, and braced for a confrontation. When nothing happened, I turned around. No one stood behind me. The door had been pulled closed, not opened. Probably Mama, then. Christmas. It was Christmas morning. She probably didn't want Charlotte's twins to hear me retching while they opened gifts. Mama wouldn't try to comfort me. No glass of iced water or damp cloth for my forehead. No, I should be kept away from the family, hidden behind a shut door because I might ruin fucking Christmas. I splashed ice-cold water on my face, stuck my mouth under the faucet, and gulped until I couldn't swallow another drop. Eyes down, I made for the hand towel. I didn't want to see my face. Not yet. I wasn't ready for that. I ran hot water in the tub, turning the brass lever to send it piping up the showerhead. Stripped naked, I stood beneath the stream. Tendrils of steam rose off it, misting the room in foggy wet. The heat stung my skin, splotching it red. I didn't care. I needed to sweat out the booze. Still drunk, the room swirled around me. Kneading shampoo into my scalp, I ran through last night in my mind. Each time Jacob's face flashed before me, my stomach twisted again. I'd kissed him in a crowded bar, with Charlotte and Paul and everyone else there. My arms ached as I washed. How had they gotten so sore? And the pit soil packed deep under my nail beds? But then I'd woken up with dirt-caked nails on a handful of occasions before, after my worst binges. I struggled to collect my thoughts. I didn't remember the ride home, but if I'd made it home, then Paul or Charlotte must have brought me here. I didn't put myself in a nightgown. When I drank into that kind of stupor, I fell asleep in whatever I wore. Paul must have dressed me, which meant he hadn't been mad enough not to care. A sliver of hope. There'd be apologies, of course, to Charlotte, to Mama, Paul, most of all. But he knew I'd been drinking all day. He'd said so himself countless times. I'd screwed up, but the night he meant he must be approaching the situation with some compassion. I finished scrubbing my body, washing my face, rinsing my hair. As I toweled off, I glanced at the mirror. Clouded with fog, I saw only a pink blur. I still wasn't ready to look at myself. I'd dress well this morning. Something smart, something that would work against the picture of me they'd expect to stumble down the staircase. A fresh silk blouse tied off with a bow around my neck. I'd do my makeup. I'd steady one hand with the other to do it just right. As I unzipped my suitcase on the hunt for my cosmetics bag, something was missing. Where were my clothes from last night? The laundry bag tucked into my roller was still neatly folded. I scanned the yellow room. My slacks and blouse were nowhere. I reminded myself to ask Paul. If he'd thrown them in the laundry room, there was a chance Mama would find them, soiled in ways I didn't want to think about. I headed back into the bathroom. Now was the time to look. I pressed my palm against the fogged mirror and swept it sideways, clearing a spot of glass. Condensation ran down its surface like tears. Saline drops had soothed my bloodshot eyes. Heavy bags hung under them, but cold cream had helped. After I finished with makeup, I pinched my cheeks to redden them and found my ring sitting alone on the wicker dresser. Paul must have taken it off as he tucked me in. I slipped the diamond on my finger. A couple sharp squeals from downstairs caught my attention. Joseph and David. My hands trembled. The drunkenness had worn off, and the way my hangover washed over me, I knew it would be a bad one. Category 5. I'd taken to describing them as though they were hurricanes. It would last a while, maybe even a couple days, if I didn't drink or take something soon. More giggles from downstairs, Mama's high voice, too, feigning excitement along with the children, and likely wishing I wouldn't come down. But I would, and I'd be pleasant to be around. The pine floors groaned as I crept down the empty hallway, not to the stairs, but to Mama's bedroom. She might have locked up the liquor, but I had no intention of facing them, facing Paul, without help. Her door stood ajar. I opened it and slipped past her four-post floral bed. The walls had been painted on all sides with a mural, garden scenes, mostly, gracefully meandering peacocks. I made for the bathroom. Pausing, I waited to hear Mama again, to make sure she was still downstairs with everyone else. A woman laughed, but it could have been Charlotte. It pealed once more. Nope, definitely Mama's dramatic cackle. I opened her medicine cabinet and found a whole row of vitamins and oils and minerals, another shelf of cholesterol medicines, a beta blocker for her heart, bottles of antidepressants left over from our try-before-you-buy family doctor, Mary Ann Connor. Mary Ann Connor. Her name in print froze me. I'd once stood in this bathroom with the woman when I was very young. As a child, the circumstances had been confusing. I only remembered pulling my skirt back up to my waist, returning Dr. Connor's plastic container to her, filled with vinegary urine. I shook my head. Jackhammers tore into my skull. No, Mary Ann's prescribed antidepressants wouldn't do. They wouldn't help now. As I rifled through the containers, a bottle peeked out from the back, a label warning for drowsiness and a caution against driving. Diazepam, 10 milligrams per tablet. Valium. The bottle was half full. The label said 90 tablets and had been dispensed a year ago, around the time Daddy passed away. If they'd been in the cabinet for so long, that meant Mama didn't use them regularly, and that she wouldn't miss a few, either. I gulped down 3 and stuck a handful in my pocket. As I shut the medicine cabinet, Mama's face appeared in the glass, and I nearly screamed.
What are you doing, Gray?
I have a headache.
That's no surprise,
she replied, arms crossed. She eyed me up and down.
At least you've put yourself together. Best you can.
She'd noticed that much. I tugged at my bow and brushed the sides of my slacks. Is everyone downstairs already? My voice caught on my throat. She paced to her vanity and began to retouch her own makeup.
The boys got up early. They've nearly torn through all their presents. There's still a few under the tree with your name on them, though.
A pleasant accent punctuated the last sentence, like she expected me to be happy to open gifts. Like I was a child, too. I dug my nails into my palms.
Aunt Paul? How's Paul this morning?
I clenched my teeth, waiting for the answer. Mama and Paul often whispered behind my back. He treated her like the mother neither of us ever had.
Whatever had happened, Paul had probably briefed her by now. She ignored me. Cora's put out a proper breakfast, and there's plenty of coffee. Get on downstairs.
I did my best not to face the cracked landing mirror as I made my way down the steps. The last thing I needed was to catch another glimpse of my face. Downstairs, the twins chased each other from one room to the next, mimicking airplane noises and gunfire as they clung to new toys. Johnny Cash's Silent Night crackled from a record player in the salon. The smell of bacon and coffee filled the whole of downstairs. I walked into the kitchen. The griddle sizzled as Cora worked to keep every inch of counter covered with hot food.
"Merry Christmas," she offered cheerily as I passed behind her.
Charlotte sat on the cushioned window bench in the breakfast nook. We locked eyes. Hers were heavy with bags, too. She hadn't bothered with makeup, but then she didn't have anything to compensate for. I turned to the French press by the toaster oven. Some coffee would help keep my mind sharp once the pills kicked in. Paul wasn't around, and my anxiety dissolved. I felt an inch better about things.
He'd probably needed space to calm down from last night. He might be out back, or perhaps watching TV in the den. With Joseph and David running amok, he might have been chased there. Paul didn't care for children. As I stirred my coffee, Charlotte walked up from behind, and my shoulder jumped.
"Gray, I need to speak to you,"
she whispered in my ear. "Of course," I answered, tapping my spoon on the cup's rim. She spoke softer.
"In the library."
My pulse spiked. Even the pills couldn't stop it. Thank God I'd found some. I took a sip of coffee, bitter and strong. "Okay." In the library, oak shelves covered three of the room's four walls, each lined with elegant books, occasionally interrupted with a marble bookend of some sort. Heavy drapes were pulled to the sides of tall windows. Charlotte slid the parlor doors closed, shutting the room off from the rest of Piper Point.
"Paul didn't come home."
Her words struck me like a hammer. She paused, either letting them sink deep or waiting for a reaction. I wasn't sure which. How could Paul not have come home? Hadn't he dressed me for bed? She folded her arms, worry painted on her face.
"Do you remember last night?"
The question shook me. I had to tell the truth. "No, not much."
"You kissed? No!"
I yelped before lowering my voice.
"No, I remember that. Just not much after."
"And wait, how did you know? You left Ruby's before." Her brow knotted, eyes glistened.
"Paul called me on his way home. He was heartbroken, sobbing. Told me what happened."
A sense of dread began to gnaw away at my insides.
"I tried to wait up, but I fell asleep. When the kids woke me up early this morning, I looked out my window. My car's the only one in the driveway."
The dread latched onto my ribs, pulling them inwards, pressing hard on my lungs.
"No car?"
I finally managed to say something. Useless, but it was something. I picked at a tiny sliver of skin at the corner of my thumbnail.
"I went to your room to see if you made it home all right. I heard you throwing up, and I shut the door so Mama wouldn't hear. Paul brought you here, and then left, I guess? Does Mama know?"
Another useless question. Charlotte looked uneasy.
"I had to ask her if she'd seen him, heard from him."
I tore the piece of skin off. Blood pooled in a crescent. I shoved my hand into my pocket to wipe the blood on the inside fabric. My fingers brushed past more pills.
"I don't know,"
I whispered. It was all I could say or think. "I don't know." Welling tears stung my eyes.
"It was quite a night," she said, pulling me close.
She diluted the anxiety in her voice.
"I'm sure he just checked into an interstate motel for a good night's sleep, one with no arguing. He'll be back. If we haven't heard from him by the time lunch is done, we'll start making calls. I'll speak with Cora, too."
"Okay," I answered, coughing.
"To tell you the truth, I'm a little relieved," she said, before casting her eyes to the floor.
"Relieved?" I wiped my own.
"Why?"
She hesitated.
"Paul sounded so upset, and you had a lot to drink. I was afraid he might..."
"Hurt me?"
"I'm just paranoid, that's all. It's not helping, and it was obviously off base."
She offered a tiny smile and pulled me in for a second hug.
"But he never has, right? Hurt you?"
"No," I answered. "Of course not."
"Of course not. Now go up and get your phone. Make sure it's not on silent."
She kissed my cheek and slid the creaking doors back open. My phone. It should have been the first thing I thought to look at. I raced to my bedroom, buoyed by a sense of hope. But there'd been no missed calls. And by lunch, there was still no Paul.
8. Nina. Halfway through Christmas Day, the Kings, or Paul Godfrey, still hadn't reported their rental missing, or reported anything else that might account for it. If a trucker hadn't spotted it, it'd still be sitting on the highway, bizarrely unmissed by its renters. Auntie stirred beneath her snow-white blankets. She'd wake soon. I'd sat next to her bedside since returning from Paul Revere Highway, the morphine ready to go the moment she could swallow it. I hated this stretch of time more than anything. The few seconds after she woke, but before I got the meds in her. Those seconds lasted years. I knew the abandoned rental and Auntie's severance pay weren't overtly connected. Only related, like kin. Related just enough to leave me with questions. And every second that ticked by without a call from the Kings fed my questions like fuel to a fire. So odd. Why did Joanna King write checks, large checks, to Auntie Tilda? Auntie had been clear the discussion was off the table. I'd respect that. But there were two other ways I could answer this question, and both turned my stomach sour. I could use my badge to pull Tilda's accounts without any sort of legal reason, a fireable offense for which there'd be a record, or I could become executor of her will. Except she likely didn't have a will and certainly no executor if she did. I could spare her the trouble and apply for the job myself at the probate court. The vacancy and my reputation would land me the gig, no question. But no matter which I chose, I'd be giving Auntie the runaround. She stirred, moaning. "Here you are," I whispered, rushing the measuring cap to her lips. They hardly moved. I watched her throat like a hawk till she swallowed. Another pained groan, the sort that stabbed my heart. And she went still again. As the drug coursed through her body, I relaxed back into my chair. On my phone, I thumbed through recent news articles written about or by Mr. Godfrey. Judging by the op-eds he penned for sites like Politico and the Huffington Post, he seemed mighty important. If they didn't call soon, I'd have to phone them. No other choice. I chased the thought away. Surely they'd call. Who the hell loses a rental car and doesn't care one way or the other? Sammy made it seem as though I had some ulterior motive for not reaching out to them immediately, but I didn't. I checked that the Kings hadn't reported anything and kept Sheriff Burton posted. There'd been no questions from any of them. The car wasn't stolen. There was no harm in letting them come to me. I circled back to the check instead. I'd visit the probate court and apply to be executor in person. No reason to bother Auntie Tilda with any more of the Kings' mess. Lord knew she'd seen more than her fair share of it already. If she died never hearing the names of anyone in that family again, I'd be content. The same went for me, too. I'd been on the receiving end of a poverty scholarship, thanks to that family. They called it something different, though, a term with less sting to it. An academic advancement award, I think. But a poverty scholarship's what it was. Only two high schools had served Elizabeth County since the 1960s. The public one, Pickens High, and the private school racial integration had spurred the creation of Elizabeth Baptist. I entered freshman year as an Elizabeth Baptist School Lion, named after the Lion of Judah. Most folks in the county couldn't afford private school no matter what color they were. So Pickens High had a healthy mix of students. Elizabeth Baptist was a different story, and the handful of awards they doled out each year helped mitigate their white problem. But for those few lucky students given one, loneliness was an understatement, especially at a school like that. Adding to the isolation was the knowledge of where the money had come from. I knew it had been Auntie Tilda's work at Piper Point, complete with Congressman Seamus King's signature at the bottom, so I never forgot where to direct my gratitude. Indeed, I learned quickly to take nothing for granted and find my seat early. Gray usually walked in right as the bell rung. At Elizabeth Baptist, Christ was Lord, but for the 4 years I attended, a queen reigned too. Or a king, rather. Gray King. She wasn't a mean girl, by any stretch, though there was no question her father and her family's money placed her squarely atop the totem pole, just as my lack of both dictated my own station. She was every bit what a low country girl should be. Demure, polite, a touch enigmatic. I'd be lying to myself if I didn't admit how easy it was to get caught up in her, in the cult of personality that surrounded such a pretty king. We wore the same uniform, pressed khaki skirts and white polos. She wore it better somehow, or at least I convinced myself she did. She took her assigned seat directly in front of mine. "It's freezing in here," Gray announced to no one as she rubbed her goosebumped arms. That day I wore a knitted sweater over my polo. The room might have been cold to Gray, but I was warm. In fact, I'd planned to remove my sweater anyhow. I didn't think twice and tapped Gray's shoulder. She turned. "You want my sweater?" I asked. She hesitated, her face devoid of emotion. At once, I grew painfully aware of my mistake. I knew what was running through her head. She was desperately searching for a reason to turn down my sweater. She'd have accepted it quickly from her friend Francis, or even the guy always buzzing around her like a bee, Jacob Wilcox. She didn't want to wear a sweater from me, and I knew exactly why. "No, thanks," she finally replied, half smiling. "I'm not that cold." It was a lie. She meant she wasn't cold enough to wear my sweater. Years later, I learned the term microaggression. They formed the basis of an entire lecture topic at the police academy. Casual offenses, they were usually trivial, ignorable even, but they were deeply anchored in racism. I said nothing. Class went on, but the comment lingered at the front of my mind. Later, when I shut my locker door, Gray stood waiting. My heart jumped.
"Can I talk to you?" she asked.
Her voice had an earnestness I didn't often hear at this school. I nodded.
"I wanted to say I'm sorry," she told me. "I'm sorry for not taking your sweater."
She went on.
"To tell you the truth, it ate me up inside. All class long, I had to confront something ugly inside me. Something that pushed me to turn down your sweater."
Her honesty floored me. As my face flushed, I clutched my books to combat the awkwardness.
"It's okay," I replied, discomfort creeping into my voice. "It's not okay," she said, "and I know that it isn't. Pretending otherwise won't make me any better."
She smiled at me once more.
"Lacrosse tryouts are in a couple weeks. Think about giving it a shot, all right?"
"Sure," I replied. She turned back down the hallway beneath the fluttering school banner strung from the drop ceiling. Francis had been stalking like a lioness a few yards back during our conversation. When Gray disappeared, she pounced.
"School doesn't provide equipment, and it's expensive," she'd said through a meaningless smile. "Team's okay the way it looks now. Nothing personal."
By junior year, I'd made captain of the varsity team. If I recall correctly, Francis hadn't made the cut. She'd been relegated to another year on JV. In a big way, I was grateful for my time in the lion's den. High school taught me all about microaggressions. But Grace showed a stunning level of self-awareness, the sort that spoke of potential, a potential to overcome, and one I suspected she hadn't lived up to. Frances Miles was no mystery. She was a bitch, plain and simple. I cut my teeth on courage. I thought of Auntie Tilda's proverb again, "If you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything." But this time, the responsibility to confront was mine. This time, I'd have to go to the Kings. I needed to inquire about the abandoned rental. But on a deeper level, something about making contact with the family exhilarated me. I hadn't seen Gray in so long, and the rental suggested she'd come home. What kind of woman was she now? The one I caught a glimpse of outside my locker? Or maybe she'd become more like her mother over time, entitled, bordering on petulant. Maybe Auntie's checks would come up, maybe they wouldn't. But I liked the idea of sharing a room with the Kings, with the women who held those answers.
9. Gray. Hours since lunch, and still no word from Paul. The closer evening drew, the more my palms itched. The taste of grapey fermentation, whispers of cool white wine, rose in the back of my throat. My body anticipated a drink my mind knew wasn't coming. "Where could he be?" I asked my sister. My voice cracked as I paced back and forth in my stale bedroom. It still smelled of sweet liquor, a queasy cotton candy stench. Charlotte sat on my unmade bed. "There's the Ramada on Keebler Street." She thumbed through her phone, jotting down numbers on a notepad. "And the Days Inn by the Greyhound stop." She paused. "You don't think he'd..." "He'd never take a bus," I said. "He'd fly, and I've checked our accounts twice now. He hasn't booked anything." She nodded her brow. "You're sure you checked all the accounts? He doesn't have, I don't know, another one? What's that supposed to mean? Like a secret bank account?" My words caught on my throat again. "Men hide things from their wives all the time. Will certainly hid a lot from me." There was no way Paul had secret accounts. A corner of me wished he did. Then I wouldn't be so certain none of his cards had been used since 11:07 p.m. Excruciatingly certain. "No, that's crazy. Not Paul. Paul and I don't keep secrets." The statement soured in my mouth. My thoughts went to his phone, to the way he always kept it out of reach. And I hid my drinking from Paul. I wasn't always great at it, but I tried my best. "Besides," I added, "he insisted on merging all our accounts after we got engaged." Charlotte froze. "All your accounts?" "Well, yeah, we were going to be husband and wife. It made perfect sense." "Even the trust from Daddy?" "All of them." I hadn't shared her concern, but the look she wore made me wish I had. "But we were married. What's his was mine, and mine was his. The same vows everyone else took. No caveats." Whatever a financial planner had said shrunk in comparison to the idea of keeping things from one another. At least, in the beginning. I didn't want to be like Mama. I'd wanted a marriage built on truth, on disclosure. And Paul was successful in his own right. When he landed the lobbying job with Cooper and Waters, our future seemed real. Our place in Georgetown, a pristine, empty canvas on which the two of us could paint a life together. Far from Elizabeth. Far from Piper Point. The signs, the slippage, were obvious now. But back then they were normal, routine, even endearing. I'd have a few too many glasses of wine while cooking dinner. I'd hiccup, and Paul would say, "You're cute when you're buzzed, rosy cheeks. You look sun-kissed." I'd pick out a dress for a night out, and Paul would point to another.
But this one's such a stunner.
He took an interest in me, in my appearance, but glasses of wine with dinner grew into bottles by myself, and soon kindly worded suggestions became instructions, non-negotiable. Charlotte's chiding refocused me.
You know what Daddy told us, Gray, she replied. What if Will had access to my trust? He'd have made off with half of it.
She turned back to her notepad.
Never mind. That's a discussion for another day. I'm jaded on men anyways.
She began to dial one of the motel numbers she'd scrawled down. But if Paul stormed off to some highway hotel, why had his cards gone unused since? Sure, he carried cash, enough for a room for a few nights, but not so much as to book a flight with it. Could you even book a flight with cash these days? Then there was his luggage, a topic Charlotte had delicately avoided. His black roller sat in the bedroom's far corner, collecting a sheen of fuzzy dust, mocking me. Why would he have left his luggage? He hadn't used the cards. He didn't have the cash to fly out. But he had to be in Elizabeth. He had to be somewhere cooling his heels after what I'd done. The last phrase echoed inside my mind, over and over. After what I'd done. The pills from earlier had worn off, and my heart was beating faster. I itched for a drink. My armpits dampened, and more sweat beaded on my brow. I fished another two of the Valium out of my pocket and swallowed them with spit.
Gray!
Charlotte caught me as she hung up with the motel.
What are you taking?
Nothing. I adjusted my answer. Something for my headache. She didn't seem to buy it, but I didn't care.
Did Cora hear anything last night?
No, didn't see any lights in the driveway either.
Have you called his work? Maybe Cooper and Waters has heard from him.
I can't picture him without his phone in hand.
Surely he's emailed or texted or something.
I thought about it, I replied, but Paul would be furious if I bothered work with something like this. Something that's my fault. Given the circumstances, I knew how foolish my answer would sound to Charlotte. But it was the truth, and that made me feel even more foolish. Tears gathered in the corner of my eyes again.
Okay. It's okay.
She could see my struggle and pulled me next to her on the bed.
I know this isn't easy. You made a mistake. Everyone makes mistakes. Paul makes mistakes too. Hell, he's in the process of making one right now.
She placed her arm behind my back and rubbed.
What if?
I spoke in staggered heaves now.
What if something happened to him? You shut up, Gray.
She gave my elbow a squeeze.
You had a fight. He took off to chill out. That's what happened. Do you hear? But his luggage,
I asked, desperate to believe her.
Means he didn't think this through. That he won't be gone long. Besides, I didn't dress you for bed, so Paul must have. He must have come home before leaving again.
I nodded vacantly. I still hadn't found my clothes from last night. My door creaked open and I jumped. Mama stood on the other side, her lips tightly pursed, not in a spiteful way, but worried.
The police just called.
Her tone sharpened.
They've found Paul's rental abandoned by the highway.
Paul's rental? Abandoned? The statement weighed a metric ton, and Mama dropped it directly onto my head. I stopped breathing. A sinking feeling swallowed me and any consolation Charlotte had offered.
Police?
There are detectives on the way here now to speak with us.
Her pale eyes locked onto mine. Unable to hold back, I sprang to the bathroom and vomited again. Night fell over Piper Point. Pealing thunder announced the steady rain that followed. It nearly drowned out the doorbell when it rang.
Hello, Gray.
Nina Palmer smiled as she stepped into the foyer. A stout blonde man, whom she introduced as Sammy, walked in behind her. She seemed uncomfortable to be here. I didn't blame her after what had happened with Miss Tilda. I never forgave Daddy for that night in the library. Despite her unease, she was every bit as I'd remembered, though it had been a decade or longer since I'd seen her. Her cheekbones were high, her face sharp, almost like a bird of prey. It didn't surprise me she'd chosen a career in law enforcement. She'd been tenacious her whole life, like her aunt. The grandfather clock that loomed in the corner by the door chimed for 7 o'clock in the evening. Still no word from Paul. The dread that had latched onto my chest hadn't left. I breathed, but the way it tightened, I wasn't sure how much longer I'd be able to.
"Please, have a seat in here,"
Mama instructed as she motioned to the salon. We took our places on opposite couches, Charlotte and myself on one, Nina and Sammy on the other. Mama dragged a Queen Anne chair from the hearth and took her seat between all of us.
"Cora's put some coffee on. She'll be here any minute with it."
"Thank you, Mrs. King,"
the man named Sammy replied. The rain fell in heavy sheets. The clock's second hand ticked by, extending the time Paul had been gone, tick by tick. And now there were police at Piper Point. What if Paul really was gone? If he is, another thought tickled, do I want him found? Guilt squashed the sentiment, and the room smelled like wine that wasn't there.
"I want to start by apologizing," Nina said, shifting in her seat. "I know this is an unpleasant situation, and a visit from us doesn't help."
Her eyes shot to mine as I bit my bottom lip. It had begun trembling. She went on.
"I also must say I'm perplexed we had to call. We found the vehicle early this morning."
Mama spoke up.
"We assumed he'd taken it. Paul, that is."
"We've been phoning hotels all afternoon trying to track him down," Charlotte added, taking my hand. Nina arched her brow.
"So this is more than a missing car,"
Nina stated. I knew what her next words were going to be. I braced myself.
"Mr. Godfrey is also missing?"
"Not missing," I corrected. "We just can't account for him at the moment. I understand that could be misconstrued as missing, but really, we had an argument last night." Nina stopped me.
"If you don't mind."
She pulled a tiny recorder from her book bag, switched it on, and sat it on the coffee table.
"Another Palmer with a tape recorder," Mama whispered.
She couldn't help herself. If Nina heard, she maintained a strong poker face and didn't respond.
"You were saying you had an argument?"
As I scratched my throat, my jaw tensed, craving for a drink. "Yes, there was a misunderstanding at the bar last night. Ruby's. He got angry with me."
"Angry?"
Nina leaned forward.
"About what?"
"Jealous, actually. He was jealous of a guy at the bar. Jacob Wilcox. You remember him?"
I strained a smile.
Nina's face remained devoid.
"I know him. What happened next?"
"I don't know." I picked at the fresh wound in the corner of my thumbnail. "I don't recall. I was intoxicated."
"Lord Gray, really?"
Mama scoffed. Charlotte gave her a stern look, and Mama rolled her eyes.
"Even if the details are fuzzy," Nina asked, "was there a confrontation? Anything to suggest one might have gone down?"
I scoured my memories, but the further back I traveled, the tighter the invisible fists beating my temples pounded. The dance floor, Jacob, Paul. "I can't say if there was or not."
"And then you left?"
"I don't know."
"And now your husband is gone?"
"I guess."
"And how much did you have to drink?"
"Three. Say three." Three could account for embarrassing behavior, but didn't sound quite like binge drinking. I looked down to my lap, then back at Nina. I wouldn't lie. At least, not this time. Not if the truth was what I needed. I can't say for sure. I'd had some earlier on the plane. The bartender had a loose pour at Ruby's, too. At least 6 or 7. 10? 11? Even now, I couldn't not lie. I girded for Nina's judgment, but she moved on. An abandoned vehicle paired with an unaccounted-for person is a serious matter. And you had no luck tracking down anything? A reservation? Even a gas station purchase? No, Charlotte answered for me. But he did call on the way home, upset. So we know he brought Gray here. Upset with regards to the argument? Jacob? Yes, Charlotte said. I see. And his luggage? Still here, Charlotte replied. Upstairs in Gray's room. My mind felt submerged, soaked and waterlogged and not working when I needed it to most. The lights in the room stretched into long rays. I'd only taken 2 pills. At least, I thought I'd only taken 2. I ripped more skin from my nail bed.
Where did you find the car?
Mama asked, stiffening her spine against the upholstered chair.
Paul Revere Highway. An empty stretch, but not a bad walk from here,
Sammy answered, brushing his pants with his palms.
I don't want to alarm the family, especially you, Gray, Nina began. But I'd like to consider this a missing persons case, only as a precaution, and just for the time being.
A missing persons case? Jesus! Eyes wide as saucers, Mama looked aghast.
Why on earth would this be a missing persons case?
Because, Mama, a person is missing, Charlotte retorted.
It's just a precaution, Mrs. King, Nina looked at me. It'll get the ball rolling on protocols. Put ears to the ground. Notify police in D.C. to look out for him, too. I'm sure this will turn into nothing, but the formality increases the likelihood it turns into nothing sooner.
But he's hardly been gone a day. Not even 24 hours,
Mama argued. She appeared unimpressed with Nina's reasoning.
Isn't there an elapsed time to be reached before a person can be called missing, legally speaking?
No, Nina answered. A common misconception, but no. To the contrary, when circumstances prove unusual, like an abandoned rental car, for example, we encourage friends and family to file the report quickly.
Despite the panic pulling my chest into a Gordian knot, Nina's response struck me as odd. She and Sammy had discovered the car early this morning.
Why are we only learning this now? I asked.
Nina hesitated, seemed unsure for the first time.
I expected a call from you, to be honest.
Whether she intended to or not, she redirected blame to me. If I hadn't drank so much, these questions wouldn't matter. I would have known exactly what happened last night. I'd know where Paul had gone. If I could at least remember the argument we must have had when we returned home, before he stormed off. The rattling of porcelain scattered my thoughts like cockroaches. Cora sat a coffee cup on the table before me.
Gray, sweetheart, she whispered, leaning down. Your finger's bleeding.
My thumb. Crimson smeared across the nail as blood oozed from my wound. I stood, thrusting my bleeding hand into my pocket.
Excuse me for a moment,
I announced, and walked through the dining room into the kitchen. As soon as the door shut behind me, I shattered like a hammer taken to glass.
Paul wasn't missing. Paul was angry. Paul was jealous. Paul was not...
The pendulum in my head swung. I had a handful of pills left, but I had to save them for later tonight. If I took them now, I'd never sleep. Not after this. The thought of not sleeping, of what that'd do to me tomorrow, made me shudder. I began to open cabinets, one after another. Open, shut, open, shut. When I spied the baking shelf, I froze. Vanilla extract stared from behind a box of cornstarch. I recalled being younger, throwing parties when Mama and Daddy had gone to the lake house upstate. My friends and I had poured vanilla extract in our Diet Cokes, and it might as well have been rum. Retrieving the tiny opaque bottle, I read the label. 35% ethyl alcohol. I swallowed all of its contents in two gulps before gagging on the brutal bitterness. When I'd finished, I tossed it in the waste bin beneath the sink and held my mouth under the faucet. The awful taste drowned out whatever buzz the vanilla might have given. Drinking it made me feel silly, more than anything. Voices from the salon carried over the running tap. As everyone went on without me, I bandaged my thumb. When I was finished, I reclaimed my seat next to Charlotte. Nina looked at me again, worry etched across her face.
"I was telling everyone I'd like for you to come down to the station first thing in the morning, Gray. Fill out paperwork and give a formal statement. Would you be able to do that?"
Lingering vanilla residue stuck to the inside of my cheeks, and they felt pasty and dry. "Yes." Charlotte began to speak, but Mama cut her off.
"I'll take you, Hummingbird."
She glanced at my sister. "Those boys have hardly seen their mother as is.
Cora will drive us in, won't you, dear?"
"Of course, Joanna,"
Cora replied as she collected our saucers. After bidding goodnight to Nina and Sammy through a half-hearted Merry Christmas, I went up to my room. I locked my door, swallowed the rest of Mama's Valium,